This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Here's a book to pick up perhaps for the last trip of the summer, a collection of short stories that might even take the place of a little journey on the last long weekend. It's called French Quarter Fiction, The Newest Stories of America's Oldest Bohemia. The collection is edited by Joshua Clark. It's mostly living writers, with some notable exceptions. A short account of his passage through a tunnel of night by Tennessee Williams ends the collection. Josh Clark joins us from New Orleans, also from the Crescent City, one of the writers whose story is in this collection, John Biganay. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Linda.
Josh Clark, let me ask you to go first and tell me how you picked these stories.
Well, the single criterion overall was that the stories, of course, had to be anchored in the French Quarter, physically and spiritually. The other elements were that I wanted to get something from every genre. I wanted to get a good varying of pieces and styles, writing styles. And one of the most important things was to avoid the cliches that are so often associated with New Orleans, such as voodoo and the swamp and Mardi Gras and jazz and steamy nights and Bourbon Street. And that really helped me mine through a lot of the stories.
John Biganay, tell me what you like about short stories. Why write them? Why read them?
Yeah, I've just finished a novel, Oyster, which is set south of New Orleans in Plaquemines Parish. And in that book, I expected to have a great deal more room to go off on tangents. What I found is it had to be highly structured because of the reader's memory. Reading a novel takes 4 or 5 days. But with a short story, it's a great deal more like jazz. You can take off from a theme, improvise, because the reader is going to remember what you did 10 or 12 pages earlier and come to a very surprising conclusion. So the short story seems to be more improvisational.
Gives you a little more possibility?
Of many types. There's another element to this, too, though. A short story ought to be about a moment of moral crisis. Because it's so small, it's a single decision that someone makes to try to put his or her life back into balance, whereas a novel tends to be about relationships developing. In 4 or 5,000 words, there's simply not enough time to fully develop two characters in a relationship and see its arc. But for a single decision that's going to affect somebody's life, a short story is the perfect form.
Let me ask you, you've lived there for your whole life. Is the Quarter really a community of writers, as it's described in the foreword to this collection, a bohemian village with its own culture and its own ghost? I mean, you could argue that it's basically a place with 200 bars, a lot of takeout margarita stands, and a place where tourists go to get drunk and stupid.
The thing about the French Quarter is that there's a sort of division between private life and public life.
Uh-huh.
It's a place where locals live one way and tourists live another. And so as a kind of intellectual center to the city, it certainly is a community of writers and artists, although not many of them actually live there. Parking's impossible and it's expensive to rent.
I think it's very Mediterranean, the separation of private and public life, and it is a very Mediterranean city. It's really an American anomaly, the French Quarter is, in that it's not part of the Deep South, and it's very influenced by the Mediterranean and the Caribbean. And we find the best defense, really, against these tourists and these invaders and conventioneers, as we call them, is to house them and send them on the way with a screaming hangover.
Obviously, this is not a book for teetotalers. I mean, you make that point by dividing the stories into sections that are named after cocktails for which the Quarter is famous, Sazerac, the Ramos Gin Fizz, the Hurricane. And some of the stories actually celebrate drunkenness as a kind of transcendent state. I like the story by a New Orleans-born and bred Jerry Kane Rossi, which talks about pilgrims who were drawn to New Orleans, and it's called A Bus Named Cemeteries. Josh, could I ask you to read on page 177, about the fourth paragraph, He Came to New Orleans?
Sure. He came to New Orleans 7 years ago with the intention of becoming a professional drunk. You have to be good at something, and he figured it was destiny, as he had three kidneys. Try as he might, he couldn't think of any one event in his life that was tragic. There was no dark, shaded past, no lost love. In fact, he grew up regular on a farm in Indiana. Nothing in particular pointed to that he would throw himself into a river of gin and tonics.
This story takes a very bizarre turn, which is
indeed
true of a number of the stories in this book. John?
Yes.
Speaking of bizarre turns, your short story is about a man who, although basically undistinguished in other ways, can change himself into other creatures.
Well, I think it's really about adolescence. It's about a college student who is still unfixed, has not yet hardened into who he's going to be. And so he tries out different kinds of manifestations. You can see that in everyday life, but the advantage of moving it into the fantastic and using the kind of metaphor that I used here, which I obviously took from Kafka, is that it gives us another way of looking at something common, but from a different angle. In talking about drinking and New Orleans fiction, the drinking changes one's perspective, at least for a few hours. And I think a lot of the fiction in this anthology takes the same perspective of seeing things from a new angle.
I wondered if there's some kind of little taste of your story that you'd like to read to us. I'll let you pick it, since it's your story.
Gregory's Fate. It was in late adolescence that my childhood friend Gregory first gave evidence of the unique talent that would doom him to the most pathetic of fates. A shy and self-conscious young man, Greg must have discovered the earliest manifestations of his strange gift in the privacy of his room, or perhaps in the steaming waters of his tub. I'm sure that these signs, what we would later call symptoms, were so slight as to barely attract his attention. There may have been a certain slackness to his thigh, an inexplicably enlarged knuckle, a pattern of bright pigments emerging on the pale skin stretched across his breastbone, but nothing so extraordinary as to frighten him into the waiting room of a physician. Eventually, curiosity and vague anxiety would have impelled Gregory to rub the erupting pores or poke the knob of bone protruding on the back of his hand. He would have been startled to see his manipulations affect the physical changes he was witnessing. Mesmerized as he watched himself attenuate his arm into a wing and twist his toes into talons, Gregory would not have noticed his fear yield to wonder. Hours later, turning his feathered face to the mirror, how he must have marveled at his miraculous transformation.
That is, like a lot of stories in the book, that one takes a strange twist. It has a happy, unhappy ending.
Well, that's the nature of literature.
great literature, anyway.
And also, as one discovers in the French Quarter, the nature of life, I think.
Absolutely.
The key to using the kind of metaphors that are associated with literature in New Orleans is to recognize that as it gives us a new angle, it gets us beyond the way we tend to understand something. So that we think it's wonderful that a child matures into adulthood, there's a price to be paid. Because once hardened, you stay that way until your death. And Gregory's discovery is precisely that pathetic fate.
Now, we could conclude, as your book does, with Tennessee Williams' incredibly sad account of being old and crazy in the middle of the night, but let's not.
Okay. That is a previously unpublished piece, which I think is just, I've never read anything else by him that provides such an insight into his mindset in his later years.
That's one more element that is true of many of these stories. In New Orleans, we live shoulder to shoulder with death as well. One of our great tourist attractions are our cemeteries. It's a different attitude towards the past and to death and life, I think, than other American cities have.
Yeah, and I have a great excerpt from Tom Piazza's story, Brownsville. And he says, "The past keeps rising up here. The water table is too high. All around the quarter, groups of tourists float like clumps of sewage. The black carriage drivers pull their fringe carts full of white people from nowhere up to the corner outside and tell them how Jean Lafitte and Andrew Jackson plotted things out as if the driver knew them personally. The conventioneers sit under the carriage awning, looking around with a crazed, vacant stare of babies, shaded by history, then move on." It's one of the last pieces in the entire book. I think that last section is about coming to terms with New Orleans and loving it or leaving it. Really.
Gentlemen, thanks.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks, Linda.
John Biguinet teaches at Loyola University in New Orleans, and he is the author of many works of short fiction. The one in this book is from his short story collection called The Torturer's Apprentice. Joshua Clark, who's an economist by trade, is also the collector and the editor of French Quarter Fiction, the newest stories of America's oldest bohemia. For more information, take a look at our website, npr.org.